You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
19 minutes after 11, it is time for Family Matters, one of my favorite segments of the week. And I think we do some really, really cool, important work here. Not always easy, but topics that are important to puzzle through. And they're not just merely topics. These are aspects of our lives. And today we're going to be talking about being a step parent. And I've got Jeannie Cave back with me in the studio. We chatted to her last a couple of weeks ago. Thank you so much for coming in. Are you well?
Very well. And you, Stephens?
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for having me in.
I was very excited when Mao told me a couple of possible topics we could focus on, and this one immediately jumped out at me because it struck me as soon as I saw it, although I hadn't processed the thought until that moment, that actually we have so many hybrid family models in the world, in society. And when you go back to your childhood and you read these horrible nursery rhymes and storybooks about the horrible step-mom, step-dad, that actually we haven't, certainly in this series yet, despite the many interesting topics we've touched on, talked about step-parents.
100%. If we think about Snow White, if we think about Sleeping Beauty, it's always the horrible stepmother, the evil stepmother, Cinderella even, and the evil step-family. But I think that most step-parents are not evil per se, but just really frustrated. If we think about it, 96% of the population is a good person. It's only 4% of the population that suffers with sociopathy. So 96% of people have got good intentions. So most step-parents have got good intentions, but they're extremely frustrated. And I think that the reason they're so frustrated is because the role of step-parents hasn't been clearly defined in our society. The natural role of mother or the natural role of father, they're clear definitions, clearer definitions, so to speak, of what is expected of that parent. But when it comes to the step-parent, where do they really fit in? And I think that's the main reason why they're so frustrated. And that frustration at the end of the day, that can look like the evil step-parent, but it's really just a frustration of not knowing where they stand.
And it's so interesting because in the last couple of weeks, we've touched on how a very biological idea of family is one that doesn't ring true, particularly in a society like ours, where familial relationships are often non-biological, extended families. You know, you could be raised by someone else. And yet, despite that, there is still an unspoken conversation around step-parents and where step-parents fit in. Maybe we should just be plain speaking about what some of those fears are. I would imagine that for many people suddenly find themselves a step-parent, the first fear is, you know, I don't want to be seen to be competing with my stepchild's biological parent, particularly if they are still around and they have a relationship with them. Where am I entitled to fit in terms of the hierarchy of their relations?
Mm. What exactly is my role? What exactly is my job? And I think that the biggest difficulty there is that a lot of the time, step-families occur because of divorce. Obviously, there are other reasons that step-families occur, but they occur because of divorce. And in my view, when there is a marriage with children, there are three channels of open communication and three channels through which unfinished business flows. Let's think of them like sluice gates. The first one is the relationship. The second one is the children. And the third one is finance. So when there is a process of divorce, that relationship channel closes, that sluice gate closes. But there's a lot of unfinished business through the process of divorce and all the unfinished business from the difficulties in the marriage that need to go somewhere, and then they flow through the open channels of finances and the children. So a lot of the unfinished business between the two natural biological parents becomes the problem of the step-parent because it's flowing through the channel of the children.
Mm. Well, please do call in if you are a step-parent. How have you dealt with what Jeannie is describing as some of those problems and challenges that perhaps you didn't sign up for, but are the reality of the new family structures that you find yourselves in? What has worked? What hasn't worked? And perhaps you are currently going through those challenges, and we'll do our best to give you advice with the help of my psychologist here in the studio. 011-883-0702. That is our Johannesburg number, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. You know, when we talk sexuality on Fridays with Dr. Eve, a recurring theme that she loves reinforcing, which obviously I fully endorse, is how a lot of the challenges in these relationship dynamics often flow from a lack of communicating. So as a first starting point, voicing what it is that you're feeling and those uncertainties, because many step parents may not even be sure whether they have a right to, and I put that in scare quotes, to even voice feelings of uncertainty.
What 100%. And then what happens is that the person ends up riding what I call the guilt-resentment seesaw. It's like a pendulum. They absorb, they don't know what to say, but it has an impact on them. So eventually when they do express what they say, it swings all the way from guilt all the way to resentment, and it comes out angry, it comes out as criticism, it comes out as blame. So the lack of communication or ineffective communication is 150% very important to pay attention to, because clear communication and effective expression of needs, especially important, will help prevent that.
So what would be your advice for a starting point for that? If I, you know, find myself falling in love with Jeannie and I know
that you're only human.
I'm only human, yeah. The least I can do. And you have a child and I declare that I don't have a problem with the child, for as part of my love for you. But then obviously, you know, the reality is that it's particularly the point at which you cohabit or you decide to get married as a couple, now you've got to deal with things that perhaps was just an intellectual commitment that is now a day-to-day commitment for you. Do I, right at the beginning, say, love, we need to talk about what Joanne's place in our family will be?
100%. So clearly defining roles. So
if that's our child's name.
Exactly.
I don't know what our child's name is.
Well, we can
we'll call it Joanne.
We can only dream. I see you've given it some thought. The biggest problem is what we call triangulation, which is where a third person becomes involved in a dyad, and then the problems cannot be solved. So 100% discussing where those boundaries belong, and then focusing on your individual relationships. So not trying to affect the relationship between your partner and the child through your relationship with your partner, but focusing on, first of all, your relationship with your partner, because when you then become a unit, that's what we call the executive of the unit, the spouse subsystem, whether you're married or not married. We call that the spouse subsystem. And that is the most important subsystem of the family, because as we see with divorce, when that subsystem changes, the whole system has to change. So focusing on that spouse relationship, clearly defining roles, clearly expressing needs and having open communication. And when you have a non-blaming, non-judgmental culture in your relationship, where it really is focusing on expressing needs in the future tense and not complaining about things that are happening now, things that have happened in the past, that's really possible. And then from there, as the step parent, focusing on your relationship with the child and remembering that the child is a person and not a project. It's not your responsibility to make sure how this child turns out. If this child is a good reflection on you, you're not going to be marked on how this child turns out at the end of the day. And remember that it is a little person just growing in the world, and focusing on that relationship rather than the outcomes of how this person turns out.
Okay, we've got our first caller, Jeannie.
Yes.
Let's go to Hyde Park. Hello, Sharon. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Hi, Eusebius. Hello. So I am in a situation whereby I'm a stepmother, and I have three stepchildren. And the relationship is quite cordial. But when it comes to discipline in the home, the biological mother will not allow me to discipline the children or get involved in discipline when they're in our home. So that for me is a problem. Where's the boundaries? Am I allowed to? Should I step back? If the kids are with us in our home, am I not allowed to meet our discipline when I see that the kids are misbehaving? What are my boundaries actually?
Well, I think...
should I step...
Sharon. Yeah, Jeannie.
Yeah, Sharon, I can hear that you really have your hands full. Three children is quite a lot. And I can hear that you really are trying your best with these three children to be a good stepmom to them, and you really want to be respectful of those boundaries. I can really understand that must be very challenging. When it comes to discipline, and I just want to put the disclaimer that every family is unique and every family has to find what works for them, not what's right or wrong, but what works for them. But if the biological mother of the children has an issue with you disciplining the children, so to speak, then my recommendation would be to focus on respect within your relationship with the children. So getting onto a level with the children where it's about not whether they're behaving properly or improperly, appropriately or inappropriately in general, whether what they're doing is right or wrong, good or naughty, but how are they impacting on you? So not sending them to naughty corner because they've left their shoes out, but how it impacts on you and what you would like to see happening in your relationship with them that would make you feel happy, comfortable, and satisfied in that relationship. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
You're welcome and good luck.
Thanks for that. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks, bye.
I'm glad Sharon opened up because that's the next issue that I wanted us to touch on. A lot of step parents battle with that particular 100%. Issue.
It's the most contentious issue when it comes to step parenting, and I think it's because of access rights that fathers typically have, which is typically a lot less than what the mother has. So let's say the father typically has the children every second weekend and maybe on a Wednesday night. Okay, that's not a lot of time with your children, really. That's 6 or 7 nights a month that you've got your children a lot of the time. So a lot of the time what happens is that when the father has the children, and I'm just speaking obviously in general, he doesn't really want to spend a lot of that time disciplining the children. So he wants to have fun with them. He wants to have a good time. He wants
create
lovely memories because he doesn't have a lot of quantity of time. Mm. So he wants to make sure that that time is pleasant for everybody. So he'll let a lot of things slide.
Mm.
And then the stepmother, having a different perspective, it's different for her. So she will see things that maybe the father is even unaware of.
Mm.
And because he doesn't want to spend a lot of the time disciplining the child, the stepmother, with best intentions, will often want to step in and help to correctly raise the children and correct those behaviors.
That's a mess I want us to tease out a little bit.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
26 minutes before noon, we're talking about being a step parent. Many of you are in that position. What have been your challenges? How have you dealt with the uncertainty that comes with being a step parent in terms of what your role is in relation to a partner's child that is not your child biologically? How has that worked out for you? How have you learned the hard way? And what are things that have worked for you? I'm also very curious, by the way, if you were raised by a step parent, looking back now, what advice would you give to a step-parent to deal with the kind of child that you know you were when you were a step-child? Because as step-children, my folks got divorced when I was 10, and step-children are also often interesting creatures. We are persons, as genies say. We can manipulate, for example. We can be mean. So looking back now, what are ways in which you think your step-parent could have handled situations better or even learned to have read you better when you were a step-child? 011-883-0702. Call us, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Gina, you know, you said something in the beginning that struck me as, yo, that is a hard ask for many people who love their partners that already have children, which is, you have to learn that you are not ultimately responsible for how the stepchild turns out. But this discipline conversation that our first caller talked about, sometimes the desire to discipline a stepchild that is just being unruly is not just because unruly behavior when you're out at spur is unacceptable, but also because you might think to yourself, insofar as I love my partner, I would like to make sure that my partner's child, although the child doesn't live with us, turns out to be the best possible adult, just as a matter of part of my love towards my partner. You know, so there's a values issue there. I might think, like, if I bite my tongue and I say nothing and this little brat keeps misbehaving and dad is being soft on him because dad only has little time with him, so doesn't want him to have memories of being spanked, that I might also feel that, in fact, my silence is reinforcing bad behavior.
Oh, 150%. And I think it's very difficult for step-parents. And like I said, most step-parents have got the best of intentions. The last time I was here, we spoke about a book called Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon. And in that book, he talks about how we want our children to be like us and how we want our children to have our values and to have our principles. And it's no different to a step-parent. But I don't think discipline per se is the most effective route to get there. There are many ways to build a relationship with a child. And we must ask ourselves, why do children act out? We often say the child is not giving you a hard time. The child is having a hard time. And a lot of the time that can be because there isn't enough structure. There aren't enough boundaries from the natural parents. And that's where the step parent wants to step in and set those boundaries. But to go about it in the roots of discipline might not always be effective because the step parent might not have yet built up enough credit with the child. So it's not to say as a step parent you've got to bite your tongue and not say anything. My input would be to have that direct relationship with a child and have that one-on-one relationship with a child. But like I said to Sharon, to rather focus on respect and boundaries within our relationship. And that's by investing in the child. So you want to think of it like a bank account. You first have to put some money in the bank account before you draw it, or else you're going to land up in debt, right? So we all know debt is a problem. And that happens in relationships too. So you want to first focus in the relationship with the stepchild on building up credit in that relationship through lots of empathy, through lots of unconditional acceptance, through lots of congruence, and lots of time with that child and lots of focus on that child. And then once you have that credit built up in that bank account in that relationship, then you can start setting boundaries.
I don't know what the patterns are, in particular in your work with families of this kind, maybe, Jeannie, and what's, you know, what the odds are of building up a good bank account that you can then use with their child, as you know, for when you do need to be a little bit harder on the child. But sometimes children are also just manipulative.
100%.
I know at some point that if all I need to say to Jeannie and she's going to burst into tears is, "You're not my mom, Jeannie." What do I do with that child?
You know, not my real mom. Yes, I'm not your real mom, but I do care very much about you. So why do children act out? Children act out because they are anxious. Why do children become manipulative? They're manipulative because they are anxious. They want to feel where those boundaries are. If you think about it, if you don't set any boundaries, the child doesn't get a clear picture of you. And so they're going to try and feel for you. They're going to try and feel where those boundaries are, almost like feeling around in the dark. And when you either step away from those boundaries by, like the biological parent being over-accommodating, or as a step-parent setting a very harsh boundary, it just creates more anxiety. So children generally act out when they're having a difficult time, and they can become manipulative. It's because they're trying to feel out where those boundaries are. Mm.
Good morning, David. Thanks so much for calling us.
Hi, good day. I would just like to know, I'm a step-parent for the past 22, 23 years, and we've never actually made it clear to the boy that that I'm his stepfather. Mm-hmm. I would just like to know, do I need a medical, a professional in order to sit in with this conversation that I have with this boy, or can I just have it with him on a one-on-one basis? What will be...
How old is he, David?
He's 24 now. I met the mother when she was, when he was turning two years old. Mm. And we've said that we'll tell him one day. One day we'll have this conversation with him. But we never have because our mother passed away in 2010. Mm. So sweet. I'm now sitting with this boy that I'm still looking after. Well, he's 24. He's basically looking after himself. But he doesn't really officially know that I am his stepfather instead of biological father.
Just one other factual question before Jeannie gives professional advice. How would you describe the quality of your relationship with him? And I assume he obviously doesn't know his biological dad.
Yeah, no, we have a very good relationship. We're not as very close as we are, because now he's got a girlfriend, he's more involved with that side of his life. So not as close as we used to be, but yes, we still have a very good relationship. But you know, just sitting him down, eventually telling him, and do I need to sit with an interventionist kind of person?
Thank you, David, for calling and for your bravery of sharing that with us. Yeah. Jeannie? Yeah.
Well, David, you know, it takes a very special man to raise another man's child as his own. So I've got a lot of respect for what you've done. I can hear that you really love your son. And for all intents and purposes, he is your son. I'm just wondering what would be your reasons for wanting to tell him after all these years, and if it's necessarily relevant. Because like we've spoken on this show before, that family is not only about DNA, but family is about relationship. And it sounds to me, for all intents and purposes, you are this young man's father. And I'm just wondering if it is to your benefit and his benefit, and this might not be the answer for every family, but if there is a reason to even have that conversation, or if it's something that is actually irrelevant because you guys are a family.
Why do you feel the need, David?
Going forward, I mean, anything can happen to me tomorrow, and you will, you know, eventually have to find out that who his real father is,
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, David, but are you saying that perhaps your relationship is so beautiful and there's so much integrity, you would hate for him to have to wrestle with questions of why? Why was I never told?
Why was there never an opportunity to let him deal with it instead of me still keeping it a secret.
Parenting is so hard. One of my very, very dear clients, a very wise lady, once said to me, parenting is like trying to build a puzzle in the dark with one hand tied behind your back. And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer. And it sounds to me like you and your late wife, you made the best decision at the time that you made. And I think that if the quality of the relationship that you have with your son is as you feel, that you can have this conversation with him just with sensitivity and just paying attention to timing and, you know, sensitivity around all those issues, that it will likely all be okay. But just being then as clear as possible and giving him the reasons why you've never shared with him before, and then just being available to answer any of his questions without defensiveness, that it might come as a big shock to him.
Do you think David should, given how he describes the relationship, in the first instance talk to his son without a professional or third party?
I think talk to your son without a professional or third party. You know, never want to over-therapize, never want to over-treat. And if you're finding that your son is having a difficult time, then go and seek out some treatment. But I think you guys can definitely have that clear conversation from what you're sharing with us and take it from there.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
David, not to be too voyeuristic, if you do go ahead, please call us or SMS us or email me. I would dearly love to know how it goes. I've got a good feeling about this one, but all the best for you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Doctor. Cheers.
Difficult one, but a beautiful one. And I love the analogies that you use when we talk family matters, Jeannie. He obviously has a lot in the bank.
He has a lot in the bank.
That's got to be reason to be positive.
100%. He's got a lot in the bank. And it's very difficult, you know, because every single family is unique in some ways. It might be or it might be a relief to this young guy to find out that this is the case. It might be a non-issue for him. Hmm. But like you say, I think David's definitely got enough credits in the bank to make a withdrawal.
Yeah. Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hello. I always wanted to say to you, I enjoy your show always very much, but now I'm not in the right frame of mind.
It's okay.
I'm totally disagreeing with what's being said now.
Tell us your story, Sarah.
I found out when I was about 14 that I was not really the child of my father, but my father was somebody else. Mm. And I still feel so betrayed about it. I'm 67 years old, and I think hearing, and you can see how it affects me. Mm. I think that man would do justice to the child, to tell the child, to sit the child down and tell the child how he came about, and he would respect him for that, instead of going and not saying anything to him and for the child finding out by accident.
Mm. You found out by accident, Sarah?
Hello?
Did you find out by accident, Sarah?
No, my father, somebody just came to me and said to me, so there's a man outside looking for you. I ran out, and I stood and I couldn't. I looked at this man. I didn't know this man, but I know I knew him. Mm. I couldn't even greet him. I just stared at him, and then he greeted me, and he said to me, do you know me? Did your mother ever tell you about me? I said, no, who are you, and what should she be telling me about you?
Yes.
So he says to me, I'm your father. I said, oh, you're never my father. My father's gone to work. He said to me, that's not your father. He said to me, get into the car. We'll go to your grandmother, and we will go and verify that. I got into the car, 1 street away, ran into my grandmother's house. Mama, this man says he's my father. She says, no, he's not your father. My grandfather screams from the other room and says, no, each time that she knew the truth.
What a terrible shock for you, Sarah.
I'm so sorry, Sarah. I'm so sorry. And it's obviously affected you throughout your life. I'm very sorry.
I don't think anybody must ever hide it. Mm. I think a child will respect you more and will appreciate it when you come out and you say how it happened.
I can hear it was a terrible shock for you, and it was a very traumatic way in which it happened, and it felt like your whole world was being turned upside down. And for you, it would have been far better had your mother and your stepfather sat you down and prepared you for that.
My mother didn't. Yes. When she came, my father and my mother came home from work at night. I said to her, I said, this man came and this is what happened. She smiled. I can still see her smiling. She said, it's not true. I saw the tears in my stepfather's eyes, and he said, when you opened your eyes, I was your father, always be your father. But that was not okay for me, because I knew why I looked at the man, because I was bonding with him, not knowing him, but he was my father. And
Sarah, I'm very sorry for that. I'm very, very sorry. How did it affect? Because that was now like 50 years ago. Did it permanently compromise your relationship with your mom and with stepdad?
No, I tried to forget. But wait, that's not how it ended. I used to write little letters to my own father. Mm. My stepfather got the letters, and he belted me each and every day. I had welt marks over my body each and every day for trying to communicate with my real father. So I just think a child should know. I'm an old woman now, but it's so devastating till now.
That is really devastating.
I'm very sorry for what you've gone through, Sarah.
So we can hear that the way that the adults in the situation handled it was very ineffective and has left permanent damage for you.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway, thank you so much.
But thank you for sharing. Thank you for the bravery, Sarah. And all the best to you. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what more to say to her, Jeannie, because what is horribly instructive about Sarah's call is that these kinds of family secrets, if not properly managed early on, can have an effect 50 years later.
100%.
It was literally 50 years ago 100%. That Sarah had that experience.
And like I said, every family situation is unique. We're talking about, you know, the very traumatic ordeal of a 14-year-old girl versus the David's call, which is a 22-year-old grown man. Very different family situation, but it reminds me of a metaphor a little girl used in therapy with me one day. She was 13 years old. And her parents were divorced, and her parents were always fighting over time with her. Obviously, both parents loved the child very much and wanted to spend as much time with her. But she came to me the one day, 13 years old, and she said to me, "My parents are like two foxes fighting over an egg. But what they don't realize is that there's a baby chicken inside trying to grow." And I think as a step-parent and a parent, you've got to just remember there's a baby chicken inside that egg trying to grow.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Let's go to Albert and Zach. Thank you so much for holding on and for calling in.
Hi, how are you, man?
Very good, thank you.
Oh, great. I know I was driving right now on my way to Springs, and I just stopped the car in the freeway N17 because I needed advice and just help, in short. Look, I became a stepfather when I was 19. I met a really beautiful woman. I fell in love with her, and I've been with her ever since. When I met her, she had a kid. The kid was 4 months old. My son was 4 months old. And during the past 8 years of us being together, we're married now, but during the past 8 years of us being together, I've never heard of the guy, the father of my son, my stepson. Okay, in African languages, it's just the son. Well, I've never heard of him. I've never even spoke about him. Well, I asked about him once, and my wife said, "Well, he doesn't know where he is." And quite frankly, I said, "Look, it's not a problem. We raise our son together. It's not a problem." 2 weeks ago, a guy arrives, nice car, BMW, with a letter from the courts wanting custody of our son now. I have no idea how to handle that. And to be honest with you, it's pissing the hell out of me. You know, I'm not a violent person, but this guy is really pushing my buttons. I don't know how to handle that. I'm not disputing the fact that he should have a relationship with his son. I'm not. I want to be clear on that one. But after 7 years, he just come out of the blue.
Sure, Zach, I can hear how angry you are. And I can really completely understand why. You've invested a lot, and at a very young age, you took up this commitment to raise this 4-month-old baby, which I think was immensely brave. And I can hear you've got a lot of integrity, and you've been very, very committed to your wife and to your son. And now here suddenly the biological father, who's had no contact with the child, pitches up a day late and a dollar short wanting to have contact, and it makes you feel extremely angry. What I'm hearing is that you don't have a problem with him having a relationship with the child, but I just want to understand for you, what is the worst part of all of this for you?
Well, the worst part of it, look, I'm afraid. Look, he's just a child, you know. I'm afraid I might lose him, you know. To be honest, I'm afraid. How can I put this? It's not the thing that Sorry. Well, okay. I'm afraid just to lose my son.
Let me check if I'm understanding. You're worried about losing closeness in your relationship with your son and that he might end up preferring his dad or his father's biological father because you are actually his dad. Okay, I can understand that it feels very, very threatening for you. But it sounds to me, Zach, that you love this boy a lot, and you've been really invested in that relationship. Am I right?
With all my heart.
Yeah,
Zach, have you got the means to, have you had access to any family lawyer for help?
Well, I spoke to my wife this morning just before I left. What we're thinking is also contacting our lawyers and getting advice from a legal point of view what next steps we can take. But really didn't even want that to go that far.
Because the law is horrible. The law is designed to have winners and losers. It's very adversarial. But it may be that one has to at some point, unfortunately, it's also costly. It's emotionally difficult. Children pick up on legal battles. Legal battles are never the first port of call to settle family matters. But it might be an option that you, for better or worse, with your partner, would have to consider, I think, Jeannie.
But I can hear that Zach doesn't want to prevent the relationship between the child and the father. So he wants to allow...
It will have to be managed.
Yes, but it will have to be managed in the child's best interest. And, you know, what I can say to you, Zach, is that when it comes to parenting, protection is the opposite of support. So what you want to do is you want to support your son and you want to support him to encounter his dad for who his dad really is. Mm. You know, track record... future behavior, the best predictor is past behavior. So we don't know how long this guy is going to stick around. We don't know what the outcome will be. But my input to you will be to support your son in encountering his father for who he really is, because that's part of your son's journey. And I think that if you focus on your relationship with your son, you focus on just keep doing what you've been doing, I don't think you've got anything to feel threatened by, because you've made all that investment. And if you continue to support and not become triangulated, like I was talking about earlier, with the biological father and your son, and just focus on your direct relationship with your son, supporting him, and if it turns out that the relationship is to his detriment, then seeking legal counsel of how to create some safety for your son. But I think that giving your son the opportunity to encounter his biological father for who he really is the most supportive thing you can do. Mm. And your son will appreciate that and feel secure and safe in your relationship, that you've definitely got his best interest at heart. I don't think for one second the love that I hear in your voice and the commitment I hear in your voice, I don't for one second think that your son feels anything other than completely loved by you and supported by you.
All the best, Zach, and let us know how it plays out.
Will do, man. Thanks for advice.
Okay. Jeannie, you say in the beautifully gentle ways that you always do exactly what I was just voicing a little more
directly
to my producers here. And I was saying, I know for Zach and for the adults involved, that kind of acrimony is horrible.
Mm.
But the weird thing is, in a very macabre sort of way, I just also think it's lovely that a child has a dad that's got this much love for him.
100%. At 19 years old, where most guys are focusing, you know, they can't even commit to a pair of shoes. And here's this guy committing to a child and to a woman. I think that's so beautiful, and the family that they've created. And it is the little boy's journey to discover his dad.
Look, that's all we've got time for. You've been brilliant. I think we should do part two. I don't know how your diary is. I'll talk to you and the producers afterwards. Got so many more calls and different angles to this that people wanted to explore. And I totally agree with this person on Twitter who says your psychologist analogies are totally lit. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thanks, guys.